Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are opening the door to an operating theater where precision isn't just a clinical goal, it's really the defining engineering philosophy. We are taking a deep dive into the integrated system of modern veterinary anesthesia equipment.
It's a fascinating field because for you, the listener, when you look at the source material, and we have everything from product catalogs for breathing circuits to these deep expert analyses, you realize we're not just talking about one machine.
No.
It's a whole coordinated platform.
Mm.
And its main job is managing two huge variables at once.
Yeah.
Extreme physiological risk and just this enormous variability in patient size.
And that's the mission, isn't it? It's not a simple gas machine anymore. It's a dedicated risk control system.
Right.
So I think our goal today is to unpack the engineering, the clinical requirements that let one piece of equipment safely anesthetize a tiny 4-pound exotic pet.
And then a 200-pound dog.
Exactly. All while ensuring consistency and safety.
Yeah, precisely. We need to look past the individual parts and see how it all integrates. The gas machine, the vaporizers, the circuits, and of course the monitoring. That convergence is what creates a fail-safe environment.
Okay, so let's start with that core platform. When we say an integrated system, what are the fundamental building blocks?
You're talking about the entire loop. At its heart, you've got these high-end anesthesia machines, systems like the Mindray A9 or A8, that are basically the command center.
Right.
They manage the gas flow. They interface with the oxygen supply. They integrate the vaporizers. Then you have the delivery parts, the breathing circuits, the ventilation tech, and then the part you can't separate from it, the patient monitoring.
What I find so interesting here is that deliberate engineering shift away from, well, from guesswork, from clinician guesswork.
Yes.
We're moving from older designs that relied so much on manual estimation and adjustment to automated precision and redundancy.
And that shift is absolutely essential because of the sheer scale problem in human medicine. You know, it deals with a pretty narrow weight band.
Sure.
Veterinary medicine has to handle patients that differ by a factor of 50 or even more. And that's where the engineering gets really complex. The system has to adapt flow rates, tidal volumes.
Mm.
It has to manage things like dead space and resistance across this massive spectrum.
Let's stop on dead space for a second because that feels like a perfect example of the challenge. So for you listening, dead space is the area in the breathing circuit where gases are inhaled and exhaled, but no gas exchange actually happens. Why is that concept so critical for a small patient?
It's about concentration and efficiency. Mm-hmm. If you have a circuit with too much dead space, a small animal like, say, a rabbit or a kitten is going to start rebreathing its own exhaled carbon dioxide almost immediately.
Because its lungs are so small.
Their tidal volume is tiny. So that fixed amount of dead space is a huge proportion of their total breath. The system has to minimize it to prevent respiratory acidosis, whereas a big dog can handle that volume no problem.
So the machine is the engine. It's managing the flow, which must make the vaporizer the single most crucial precision component. That's what's actually controlling the anesthetic depth.
It's the heart of precision delivery. Vaporizers turn liquid anesthetic into a really precise vapor concentration. Historically, they were very sensitive to the environment.
Okay.
But modern systems use agent-specific temperature-compensated vaporizers, and that is a huge leap forward.
So what does temperature-compensated mean in practice for the staff in the room?
It means they don't have to worry if the OR is warm or cold or if the machine's been running for hours. That's not going to cause the gas out to fluctuate. The vaporizer maintains a stable, reliable concentration no matter what.
So it just removes a variable.
A huge one. And that drastically reduces the risk of over or under anesthetizing the patient. It's a massive risk mitigation strategy. It lets the clinician focus completely on the animal's response.
Okay, so we've stabilized the gas delivery. Now we get to the foundational safety elements, the things built right into the machine. And it seems like it all starts with something really simple, oxygen reliability.
Absolutely. The sources are so clear on this. Oxygen failure is the most immediate threat to a patient under anesthesia. So because the machine is mechanically dependent on that oxygen flow, modern systems have to have mandatory fail-safe mechanisms.
And how do those work, really? How do they stop a disaster?
Well, they're designed to prevent the delivery of any gas mixture that's hypoxic, so low on oxygen. The machine is always monitoring the oxygen pressure. If that pressure drops below a critical point, it automatically shuts off the flow of the other anesthetic gases.
Ah, okay.
It's a redundant system, often backed up by pressure relief valves and an oxygen flush. So in the worst case scenario, the patient is still getting 100% oxygen.
So once you're sure that delivery is safe, the gas has to get to the patient. And that brings us back to the breathing circuits. This is not a one-size-fits-all tube.
No. It is a critical clinical decision. You have to pick a circuit that minimizes the patient's work of breathing, but maximizes efficiency. So for large patients, clinics will typically use rebreathing systems.
Because they recycle some of the gas.
Yeah, they recycle a portion of the exhaled gas, which makes delivering those expensive anesthetic agents much more efficient.
But you can't use that on a tiny animal, I'm guessing because of the resistance and that dead space we just talked about.
You're exactly right. For a small animal, that resistance is just too much for their tiny respiratory muscles. So for them, we switch to non-rebreathing circuits.
Okay.
Things like the modified Jackson-Reese or the neonatal circuits you see in the Featherflex catalog. They're all designed to minimize resistance in dead space. They're less gas efficient, sure, but they are clinically essential for those small high-risk patients.
And if you're running a rebreathing system, you're creating a byproduct you have to deal with, carbon dioxide. Which means the KEOUR absorber isn't just a nice to have, it's essential.
Precisely. The absorber material, like the Amsorb Plus that was mentioned, is critical. But the engineering focus isn't just on the chemical itself, it's on an operational safety.
How so?
Modern absorber canisters, they have clear housings. They're designed for quick, easy visual inspection. It seems like a minor feature, making it impossible to miss that the absorbent is spent, but that's a huge improvement in workflow safety.
So we've covered patient safety, but the sources also really stressed protecting the human staff in the room. Waste gas management scavenging is listed as a core requirement, not an optional extra.
It's a fundamental part of the system design. I mean, chronic exposure to waste anesthetic gases is a serious occupational health risk.
Mm-hmm.
So any new equipment has to be assessed on how well it integrates with the clinic scavenging system, whether that's active vacuum or passive removal. It completes the safety loop.
Okay, so once the entire gas delivery system is perfected, we move to that next layer of complexity,
yeah.
The monitoring. And the sources really hammered this home. Administering anesthesia without real-time monitoring is just guesswork.
And that's because the animal can't tell you. It can't tell you it feels dizzy or cold or that its blood pressure is dropping. So the monitoring system becomes its voice. It's like the nervous system of the whole procedure, constantly tracking heart rate, respiratory rate, oxygen saturation, blood pressure.
And carbon dioxide levels.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that one, capnography. So for you listening, that's the measurement of exhaled KEOUR. Why is that considered such a powerful, almost immediate indicator of a problem?
Because it's a real-time reflection of ventilation, not just oxygenation. If the patient stops breathing or the circuit gets disconnected, capnography shows an immediate dramatic change.
Faster than oxygen readings.
Oh, much faster. Pulse oximetry, which measures oxygen saturation, that might take a minute or two to drop while the patient uses up its oxygen reserves. Capnography gives you seconds of warning time. And that speed, that's often the difference between a minor tweak and a major intervention.
That instant feedback loop is so vital. Now, we also rely heavily on pulse oximetry for oxygen saturation. What are the engineering innovations that make those readings actually reliable across different animals with different skin, fur, and so on?
Yeah, the historical problem was just getting a clean signal through all that varied tissue.
Mm-hmm.
Modern systems, especially high-end monitors like the Mindray Benevision series, they use motion-resistant sensors and some really sophisticated species-adapted algorithms.
So they're tuned for animals.
They are. And those improvements mean you get a reliable reading even if the animal moves a bit. It gives clinicians confidence that the data they're seeing is real.
And alongside oxygenation, you have perfusion, which we track with blood pressure.
Exactly. Hypotension, low blood pressure is probably the most common and serious complication of anesthesia.
Yeah.
It leads to poor tissue perfusion. So the systems have to support both the routine, non-invasive blood pressure cuffs and, when needed, the more precise invasive monitoring.
The great thing about integration is it consolidates all this data. When a clinician is under pressure and all that heart rate, BP, and capnography data is on one screen, what's the key benefit there?
It fundamentally reduces their cognitive load. When data is on five different dials, your brain has to spend precious seconds putting it all together. With integrated monitoring, the clinician sees a cohesive pattern. They see the whole picture.
So faster pattern recognition means faster decisions.
Which means you minimize the duration of any critical event.
Yeah.
The machine helps them see the entire forest, not just a bunch of scattered trees.
Okay, let's shift from the clinical moment to the operational reality. Because a machine can have the best features in the world, but if it's a nightmare to clean or always needs maintenance, it's a liability. Let's talk durability.
Right, this is where the business of medicine meets engineering. This equipment has to be built for a working clinic. Think about durability. Modern systems use reinforced frames sealed components. That means they can handle aggressive cleaning agents without degrading, and they can survive being bumped and moved around.
And that durability must connect to the total cost of ownership. A high price tag up front might be okay if the long-term maintenance is simple.
It's a huge part of the calculation. Systems with modular components are a really smart investment. If a vaporizer needs service or a QA or a canister fails, you can just swap that one part out.
Instead of taking the whole machine offline?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It drastically reduces clinical downtime, which is a killer for a busy practice, and it just simplifies all the repair logistics.
The sources give us a really interesting look at the logistics that influence purchasing, specifically in the Canadian context. What are the unique pressures on clinics there?
Logistics are huge. For a Canadian clinic, having service available within Canada is a top priority. Relying on cross-border service for parts or repairs can introduce customs delays that might shut down an OR for days.
I hadn't even thought of that.
And standardization is also key. If a big regional practice uses the same model across all its locations, training staff and managing maintenance becomes so much simpler.
And that operational focus has to circle back to staffing. In a lean vet operation, the equipment has to help the staff be more effective.
It does. When the equipment gives you reliable, stable gas delivery, your staff isn't glued to the machine, constantly tweaking the gas flow. They can spend their time on patient assessment, on recovery, on other critical duties. The technology boosts their efficiency.
Okay, finally, let's touch on workflow and scalability. Modern systems aren't just safe, they're also designed to be efficient, both environmentally and financially.
That's the low-flow capability. Mm. Modern equipment can operate safely at very low gas flow rates. This is great for environmental responsibility. It reduces the amount of anesthetic gas released into the atmosphere.
And it saves money.
A lot of money. It cuts down on consumption, which lowers operating costs and helps the clinic's bottom line.
And for scalability, you don't want to replace a whole platform just to add one new monitoring feature in 5 years.
It's exactly right. A long-term investment means picking a system that can adapt. It has to support add-ons, like specialty monitoring with GCX mounting solutions, or integrating with new services like advanced dentistry. The system has to grow with the practice.
So to bring it all back to where we started, what this deep dive has shown me is that choosing veterinary anesthesia equipment isn't really an equipment decision, it's a risk management decision.
That is the core takeaway. Every single feature we've talked about, from fail-safe oxygen and flexible circuits to integrated capnography, is all engineered to minimize clinical uncertainty and maximize predictability.
And that reliable performance, it strengthens the clinical judgment.
It does. And it ultimately improves the quality of post-operative recovery, which is really the gold standard of care.
We've seen this incredible convergence of high-end medical tech in both human and animal fields. The sources mention these really complex ventilator systems, like the Hamilton C6 and the Mindray A-Series, as part of this ecosystem. So given that sophistication, here's our final thought for you to chew on. If this tech is already designed to reduce cognitive load and flag distress, what's the next frontier for species that can't tell you they're in discomfort? Could we see systems that move beyond just monitoring and start actively predicting anesthetic depth and physiological needs?
Based on what, though? Just machine learning.
Exactly. Based purely on machine learning analysis of ongoing physiological data trends, you'd be embedding compliance and safety directly into the machine's own operational code.
The idea of predictive anesthesia. That's fascinating. Hmm. It pushes the system from just being a tool to being an active, intelligent safety partner. Anticipating what the patient needs before a human can even see the signs, that's an intriguing future for risk mitigation.
It really is. Thank you for diving deep with us. We'll catch you next time.